Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Tuesday, the 8th of September, welcome, 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 friends, on Into the Program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Kevin McCory, in for Avi Wolfman-Aaron. And welcome, Cherry Gregg, to the midterm sprint. The long Labor Day weekend is over, and political campaigns across the country are going into hyperdrive with the balance of Congress up for grabs and on the line. Now, if you look back into history, you see that President Trump's approval rating right now was low, and even lower than it was in 2018 and lower than Joe Biden's was in 2022. So if you remember, in 2018, Republicans lost 40 seats during President Trump's first term. And then in 2022, Democrats actually overperformed what was anticipated of them in that election. There was talk of a red wave. Didn't really materialize as much as maybe it could have. So the question is, in 2026, which way is it going to go? Is it going to be like 2018? Is it going to be like 2022? Lots of issues are impacting voters right now, Cherry. We're going to hash them out, the biggest ones, the biggest stories that have been unfolding over the weekend, and all kind of the big meta stories that have been unfolding over the past few months. We have a couple great columnists in to kind of give their political take on it. We'll hash all that out on the show today, and we're excited to hear from our listeners as well.
Absolutely. Our question of the day is, what issues are you paying most attention to as we head into the midterms, and what story do you think deserves more attention? The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, hello, you can leave your comments in the chat. And I mean, there have been stories that have been cropping up all, you know, from the Department of War to Iran to, you know, ballrooms, all kinds of stuff. So we wonder what folks are paying attention to.
A lot to dig into in this hour, and I think we're going to make kind of rapid ground on a lot of stories that maybe over the long weekend you weren't paying attention to.
So hopefully a little bit of a catch-up. Yeah, hopefully they were, because now it's getting real with the midterms. And so we do have our trio of local news stories right now. And since we were talking about what happened over the weekend, I mean, Philadelphia police had to deal with large crowds of teens at Dilworth Park near City Hall over the weekend. Yeah, several people were arrested and multiple citations were issued after a so-called teen takeover at the park over the course of 2 days. According to our news partner 6ABC, on Sunday, one person was arrested for having a firearm, another for robbery, and a third person for disorderly conduct. And the chaos on Sunday kind of began as the Made in Philadelphia Summer Market came to a close. You know, folks are sort of packing up, and then boom, it seems like all these teenagers that sort of came together. And there are a number of videos, you know, that went viral online showing scuffles between teens, possibly where some people were injured. So Philadelphia police increased patrols around City Hall, but the chaos happened again on Monday. And here's one of the video of what looks like police confronting a teenage male, courtesy of the Philadelphia Inquirer. You can see that happening. He falls to the ground and police officers are trying to detain him. And it got a little bit rough because they had to push another team off of the police. And so, as you can see, they did detain him. And I also saw images of at least one police officer leaving the area over the course of one of the days with some injuries. And right now, we don't know how many additional arrests were made on Monday or if there were additional arrests. We also haven't heard any official statement from police or the mayor's office on this. But a lot of folks were sort of reminded of, you know, the flash mobs that used to happen many years ago. And, you know, we hadn't had really any major problems in recent months, and so this was sort of a standout moment.
Yeah, you've had these like ATV things and motorbike things around City Hall. We had that issue recently with the Chucky mask person around City Hall.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
So it just adds to this perception, especially when it's happening at City Hall, that the city is unsafe. So you want to feel like there is some appropriate law and order response here, that it, from a perception point of view, the city can continue to say, we're a place where, no, everyone can come in and feel safe, and you don't want this sort of thing happening anywhere, but I think maybe especially outside of the city government.
And the thing is that stands out about this, like you said, Kevin, I mean, we had, you know, had lower homicides than we've had in years, and so a lot of progress had been made, and then this bubbles up, and it you know, hurts the perception of safety.
Yeah. Story number two, Cherry. Mm-hmm. We got an update in recent days about the Lancaster County measles outbreak that we've been following now for several weeks. Mm-hmm. The county coroner in Lancaster has confirmed that measles caused the death of a six-week-old Amish girl who died in mid-August. Now, the State Department of Health says this is one of the two deaths that it announced 2 weeks ago. The coroner has been disputing that measles caused the death of this other young child that the state announced. The Atlantic magazine sourced that death back to a newborn in a different Amish family where the mother had a severe case of measles before giving birth. So this is kind of complex to follow, but we have two children who died. One, literally a newborn who died the day it was born, and another who died 6 weeks later. The coroner is confirming measles caused the one with the six-week-old, but still is not confirming the one with the newborn, though the state and Governor Shapiro say both are related to measles. Complicating all this further has been the national politics of it all. Mm-hmm. So after this latest update, Shapiro called on RFK Jr., the health secretary, to, quote, stop playing games with people's lives. RFK Jr. is acknowledging this measles death, but here's where the story gets even more complex. The CDC still isn't listing a measles death in Pennsylvania on its official records. So they were disputing the other one. RFK is now acknowledging this one, but they're saying essentially because this issue of underlying cause of the death. And the distinction here seems to be that the six-week-old was born with this rare genetic condition that most babies don't survive.
Yeah.
So it seems like they're saying we're not going to count this because the baby had that condition. So just another turn of the screw in this story as we get more information out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of the day, we had, you know, Dr. Paul Offit on the show last week raising the alarm that, hey, these measles cases are something to pay attention to, and this is a serious risk.
Yeah, we have hundreds of measles infections. I read last count, 98 people have been hospitalized because of measles. I am glad that the Secretary of Health and Human Services at least acknowledged that these, you know, there was a death. You know, and like when we did our whole show on this, I mean, the people, when we got callers, everybody just kind of said they want the focus of our politicians and our elected officials to be public health and not the politics of all of this. So, you know, I hope that, you know, the door is closed on this once everybody gets their story together and that we can all get on the same page, because at the end of the day, we want to make sure that we save lives and that we protect the health of our public.
Yeah. And I think we'll have to watch what the CDC ultimately does in terms of how it counts these deaths. And I think that will be kind of the next shoe to drop in this story. And we'll see what gets counted and what doesn't.
Yeah, and I want to end, we're going to end this segment possibly on a positive note, right? The Philadelphia Parking Authority had to refund more than $1.2 million in fines from red light cameras on Broad Street. Yeah, thank you. You are welcome. Yes, Philadelphia Parking Authority had nabbed over 800,000 people speeding on Broad Street thanks to those new red light cameras all along Route 611. Well, it turns out, Kevin, that 23,000 of those citations had to be thrown out. Why, you're wondering? Well, because the PPA failed to put up proper signage in the southbound lane of the 6500 block of North Broad Street. And apparently, PPA is required to notify more motorists of the existence of the cameras. They can't ticket you without you knowing about it.
So the people were speeding.
They were actually,
yes. The camera caught them speeding, but because there wasn't a sign up that said, we're enforcing this by photo,
boom,
the tickets are null and void.
Null and void, okay? And the reason why this happened is because a construction crew had dug up the sidewalk, they knocked down the sign, and no one really knew about it. And so the camera kept clicking and ticketing.
Right.
And then a PPA person, shout out to them, doing their job, checking the signs, discovered that the sign was missing, reported it. And so they turned off the camera, but it took months for them to put up a new sign. And PPA decided to do the right thing and void all of those tickets.
Yeah, PPA gets a lot of flack in this town. But here is an instance of a low-level employee, profile and courage, coming along, seeing something that wasn't done right and saying, I'm going to do something to fix this. And then the PPA didn't have to refund that money.
Oh, no.
I mean, who would have ever found out? But they went and did it anyway.
But somebody
really
would have found out. But no, but it makes you feel like, okay, maybe they try, you know, that you're not just getting nabbed, and they figured out that they did something wrong. And so they tried to fix this. By the way, the Philadelphia Inquirer did this write up. So thank you for doing that story. But yeah, people, you know, this is one less reason to be mad at the PPA, but there's a lot of reasons to stay mad.
I guess so. Yeah. I guess so. Hey, you just follow the rules, and you're in good graces.
And by the way,
I don't got no problem with the PPA because I follow the rules.
You follow the rules. I've gotten some tickets. Clearly, you know. I mean, I try to follow the rules. I really do. But today on the show, we're going to be talking about all the big stories and what are the big issues that you are paying attention to ahead of the midterms. The number to call is 888-477-9499. We've got two columnists coming up. This is Studio 2. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. And welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Kevin McCrory, in for Avi Wolfman Arendt. Gas prices hit a six-week high this Labor Day weekend as tensions with Iran continued to build 6 months out from the start of the conflict. The unpopular war is contributing to President Trump's record low approval ratings and adding to frustration within his party.
Yeah, so today on the show, can Republicans maintain control of Congress come November? And what do the trends tell us about the issues paramount to voters right now? Joining us to talk about it are two great local columnists. We have Guy Shiraki, senior fellow with the Commonwealth Foundation. He's also a columnist at Broad and Liberty. Guy, welcome back to Studio 2.
It's good to be back. Good afternoon.
Yes, and welcome back to Solomon Jones. He's a Philadelphia Inquirer columnist, and he's also a host on WURD Radio. Solomon, great to have you back.
Great to be back.
And as always, we want to hear from you. What issues are you following most as we head into the midterms? What story do you think deserves more attention? Give us a call, 888-477-9499, or email studio2@whyy.org.
And so for both of you, we're going to start with something very basic. I mean, this administration initially talked about that conflict in Iran, measured in weeks. We're now at 6 months. Gas prices averaging $4.19 across the country, a record Labor Day price tag. Your reaction to where we are in the conflict in Iran, and also because we're just 8 weeks out from the midterm. So we'll start with you, Guy, and then we'll go with you, Solomon.
Sure. So I think ultimately the war for a lot of us is, how does it impact us? We're at a time we've now, for those of us of a certain age, where we've been, I want to say for lack of a better term, blessed in that war doesn't happen in our front yard. It's something where the men and women who defend us in the military do military action somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So we feel it when you either have someone you love and care about is away from you and in harm's way, or how does it impact us? And right now it's impacting us at the wallet, at the grocery store, with the price of gasoline. So the president's in a dilemma, right? He felt this was necessary. A lot of folks felt this was necessary to combat terrorism, to make sure that perhaps the most dangerous regime on the planet didn't get a chance to have nuclear weapons in addition to funding terrorists. It's taken longer than planned. So he's faced, as many leaders mm-hmm. have been over the years. He has two bad options, call to draw or stop. I think he's at a point where he has to push forward and suffer the political calculus. There are a lot of leaders we've had that have decided that they would risk their politics to do what they think is right. I think President Trump has reached that decision point. And if his party suffers the harm, so be it. But I don't see him changing course mm-hmm. over this. As much as I would like to pay less at the gas pump, I think the issue now is about finishing the job with Iran.
Yeah, so, and you hear that. Solomon, your thoughts?
Yeah, I disagree. I just don't think that the war was necessary at all. Mm-hmm. There was a nuclear deal in place that the Obama administration had put in place. Of course, Donald Trump ripped that up in his first term. He met with Benjamin Netanyahu, who convinced him to mm-hmm. go into this war with Israel against Iran. They claimed that there was a credible threat from Iran, that Iran was getting ready to attack us. And the crazy part about this to me, there's several things. One is that the president, as he does, said over and over again, no new wars, right? Mm-hmm. The same way he said mm-hmm. no collusion and other things over and over and over again. And lo and behold, there's a new war. Mm-hmm. I think the other crazy part about it is that we are now negotiating for things that we already had. Right. We're negotiating for open transportation on the Strait of Hormuz, where there was already open transportation on the Strait of Hormuz. Ships could go through. They did. And now we're looking at record gas prices, and not only gas, but fertilizer. That's going to affect our crops. We're looking at transportation of various items. That's going to affect prices, and it's already doing so. And so the president is going to have to pay a political price, but I just don't agree that this was something he had to do.
So, Guy, do you think that President Trump hasn't proactively messaged well enough on why this war is being fought? And also, he's made some comments that seem to kind of downplay the affordability issues that we're feeling and that you're acknowledging.
Yeah, look, I just wish across the board that there was a bipartisan focus on affordability, because the reality is I sat as a guest in this very studio 2 years ago, and we talked about affordability, and some of the very folks who are outraged about affordability were not outraged about affordability when grocery prices were going up 8, 10, and 25%, when ground meat was doubling in size. And I was sitting in that chair talking about fertilizer and gas prices. So I think the public would be better off if both sides were focused on the things that are necessary rather than, you know, whoever happens, like it's a game, whoever happens to be in the White House, they're the bad guy. Look, the president... Both presidents, you know, all presidents. As I get older, I get less into the messaging and more into the substance. Yes, he should have had the quintessential sit in the Oval Office and look the American people in the eye and walked us through it. He didn't do that. He doesn't do this. This guy's been breaking the rules, and you either like it or don't, or you accept it or you don't. In his own way, to me, he's explained the case. Has he explained it the way I would? Probably not, but he didn't call me up and ask me. I think we have to look at where we are and where we're going. The only option is to finish this job and for us as a nation to look to the real issues of affordability. And in terms of energy, again, we have plenty of energy here in the United States if we were allowed to access it. And again, I wish this was a time where we could have a bipartisan debate about accessing Americans' oil and gas in Pennsylvania, in Alaska, in the Rocky Mountains, so that we could be less harmed by this down the road.
And I would love to get your thoughts on this, Guy, but also you, Solomon, because, I mean, now, you know, the Secretary of War is going to have to go to Congress and ask for billions of dollars more to shore up this conflict that we're now stuck in. And it's just, I mean, at the same time, they're going to have to ask for lots of money. I mean, do you think there's anything that this administration can really say to justify this war at this point, especially given the affordability crises that American regular folks are dealing with every single day?
Yeah, I don't think it's just an American issue. Europe is suffering because of high fuel prices. The world is suffering because of high fuel prices. Remember, a fifth of the world's oil was going through the Strait of Hormuz before this war started. They told us that it would be over in weeks. And they did give us multiple explanations. One was to stop Iran from having a nuclear weapon. The other was to stop Iran from mounting a terrorist attack. They told us all kinds of stuff.
To free the people, yeah.
Right? And so we don't really know still what the real reason for this war was. And I think that's a problem. Americans have lost their lives. You know, thousands of Iranians have lost their lives, and we're still wondering why that has happened. And so when people have died, when the Abraham Lincoln was out at sea for 9 months, a record deployment, and you send them to Thailand as if that's going to, you know, make a difference and make it all better to send them to this playground. I just think that at some point you just have to be honest with the American people, and they haven't been, and I think they're going to pay the price if people are allowed to vote.
Going back to your first comment today, Guy, it sounds like you're anticipating a blue wave, and you're saying, I'm ready to accept the consequences of that. Is that a prediction that you would make, or no?
Oh, no, I don't think there's a blue wave. I think the president has made a political calculus that if it harms the party, that's unfortunate and necessary. And there have been times throughout American history where presidents of both parties—
So you think he can overcome this? Republicans can overcome this?
I think many of these races are localized. I mean, I think the Maine race has its own rhythm. The Alaska race has its own rhythm. The Senate races in Minnesota and Michigan. So, look, I think two things can be true. I think that there are places where Democrats are going to outperform Republicans, but I think there are unique circumstances in certain races. The one thing I say in politics, look, 6 months ago, we weren't talking about data centers or measles. Mm-hmm. Now we are.
Right.
In the next 60 days, we're going to be talking about something we're not talking about today. All things being equal,
yeah.
The Republicans hold the Senate. I am fairly confident of that. I think the House is a jump ball because we don't know the impact of all this redistricting that both parties played games.
Do you want to just jump in on your predictions there, Solomon?
I think that it hinges on whether the rules are the same. I think that the president keeps going back to the Supreme Court. Even now, some states have already delivered mail-in ballots, and he's still going to the Supreme Court to try to get mail-in ballots restricted, which is very rich given that he votes by mail-in ballot. And so we're watching a president that's trying to change the rules because he knows that historically what happens is, and it doesn't matter what party is in power, historically during the midterm elections, whatever party is in power tends to lose seats in Congress.
And I wanted to mention that because there you talked about this jump ball or whatever, but, you know, it's been predicted that, you know, it's a very strong likelihood that the Democrats were going to take the House, right?
Yeah.
But what was more questionable was whether or not they could take the Senate. But some new numbers came out today. Yeah. The battle for the Senate is tightening, with Democrats increasingly competitive in races that once looked like safer Republican territory. And I'm talking about Texas because Ted Cruz has been screaming. But again, Democrats always claim they could win Texas and then they end up losing.
Yep.
But your thoughts, you know, Solomon, and then I'd love to hear from you guys as well. Does it feel like the Democrats, given what you've seen during this primary season, are, you know, gaining ground, are getting momentum, are really resonating even across the aisle?
I think that there's three things. One is the economy. People vote based on their wallets. And so even among the base of the Republican Party, there are some people who are wavering in their support of the president based on their wallets. And so that's one thing. I think the other thing is the rules changes that have taken place and still might take place. The Supreme Court said that campaign financing, of course, there would be a rules change where it's a First Amendment issue. Your dollar is your speech. And so you can now coordinate between these big organizations and the candidates. I think the Republicans have the most money. And so we'll see if their money speaks. But I think the third thing is the enthusiasm of voters. And so what I've seen on the progressive side of the Democratic Party is an extreme enthusiasm and an ability to coordinate in ways that I really have not seen up to this point. And so I think that certainly Democrats, if they can out-coordinate and get out their votes, I think that they certainly have a chance.
Solomon, you mentioned the mail balloting issue. We should probably just unpack that a little bit more. So the Trump administration is trying to put more rules around voting by mail, which essentially runs through the United States Postal Service.
Yes.
And there's this legal fight over whether or not that should be allowed. And here we are 8 weeks from the midterms. That's an unanswered question. Mm-hmm. And a lot of local officials are feeling, I guess, frustrated and kind of like there's some chaos here. And Guy, I mean, you've been in local politics as well. I can imagine that, you know, if I'm running elections in Chester County and this is still unresolved, there's a lot in the air right now that could be frustrating for those officials.
Fair question. But again, much like with affordability, I didn't hear complaints about changing the rules in 2020 and 2021 and 2022. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court changed the deadline for mail-in ballots. They decided that drop boxes were allowed. They decided that signature verification on absentee ballots, while ballots were out, while ballots were being counted. So again, there are these things that should be bipartisan. We should have rules. We should agree. If we're all going to work on affordability, we're going to do it. If we want election reform, we should all work on election reform and get away from this sort of, you know, I'm going to tweak it to my side and then mm-hmm. tweak it to yours. But as to the substance of the election, look, elections have changed. There are like six independent undecided voters in Pennsylvania, and you guys will probably find out who they are. This is largely a turnout game. And to Solomon's point, that's really what this has largely become in the last 20 years. It is, I say, it's who can squeeze more water out of the sponge. There's very little, where can my sponge go find more water? Right now, it's undeniable. Democratic enthusiasm is much higher than Republican. We've seen that from Pennsylvania and coast to coast. The change this time is that normally the team that's ahead plays safe. And right now, the team that's ahead is not playing safe. Mm-hmm. They're saying more, in my opinion, more radical things about packing the Supreme Court, about changing the rules, about eliminating the Senate. The team that's ahead and winning usually just plays pass the ball around. Right now, they're being very risky. And so I think we're in a very different world, and which is why I think it could be a good Democratic year in certain places. But I think the Republicans are going to win the Senate seat in Michigan. I think we're going to pick up the Senate seat in Minnesota. So I think there are going to be these anomalies when Democrats step over the edge and go into that sort of scary world, because voters want you to talk about affordability, peace, crime, and my quality of life. You start talking about eliminating the Senate, packing the Supreme Court, and socialism, and I think everyday voters say, I may not like the guy or his part that's in the White House, but you folks are making me nervous. And to be honest, I don't know what those voters do, because they're really not happy with either side. They don't like the way things are, but they're not comfortable with the alternative. And that's going to be one of the great mysteries that we won't figure out till November 3rd.
Yeah, let me remind you, our listeners, of our questions of the day. What issues are you following most as we head to the midterms? And what story do you think deserves more attention? The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, you can leave your comments in the live chat. Let me read a couple comments. Paul from Bristol says, Republicans are ruining the country with their policies. Trump is killing the economy with his idiotic tariffs. The main issue I'm following is in the lead up to the midterms. Will there be a fair election? Will there be masked ICE agents at polling places? Bob says, my issues are healthcare costs, data center construction, and environmental impacts, election interference for the midterms. And these are just some of our listeners talking about what they care about. And so, you know, we talked about Iran. There's high gas prices. We're in a fight with Canada right now. There's talks about a ballroom. You mentioned mail-in voting and all of that, ballots. And when you zoom out, I mean, you think about how do you think the Trump administration, because you've argued, Guy, that this is very local, that people are talking about these local issues, but a lot of what the Trump administration is doing is penetrating and making people feel a lot of uncertainty. When you hear about all of these different headlines, are they going to, how do you think that is impacting voters beyond just affordability issues?
I think one of the things that's interesting about Donald Trump is that he loves to be in the headlines. And I think that from a political standpoint, to Guy's point, that certainly you want to get your voters out. That's one of the things you want to do. You do kind of want to play keep away when you're ahead. But the other thing you want to do is stay on message. And this president has a very hard time staying on message. And I think that that's hurting his party. I think that it's hurting the Republican brand. I think people used to look at Republicans as these are the people who are going to take care of the economy at the very least. They're not doing that. They're ruining the economy. And it's based on Donald Trump and his policies, tariffs. Who beefs with Canada? I mean, come on. I mean, it's just over and over and over again, he is not on message. He is not doing what he needs to do in order to help his party in November. And I think that if people are allowed to vote, that if we don't have craziness going on at the polls with ICE agents and other things trying to restrict people, I think that the people's voices are going to be heard and that Republicans are going to be hurt in this midterm.
Yeah. We brought up tariffs, Guy. Do you have a thought on what Solomon just said there?
And the
about
battle with Canada.
Who beefs with Canada?
Yeah. So again, respectfully, I mean, essentially, Solomon just gave a very eloquent get out the vote message for progressives. I mean, the reality is that Trump, I'll say this to my last breath. Trump is the reaction. He is the response. He is not the initiator. He is the guy that ran in and said enough. So you can like that or not. But when you walk in after a raucous toga party and you begin to clean up, and then the people get mad that you're cleaning up. So again, look, I appreciate it. These are get out the vote messages. They're going to be ICE agents. We're going to take away your right to vote.
No, that's women, not a get out the vote. That's what they talked about.
Steve Bannon doesn't work in the White House,
but Steve Bannon has the president's ear.
Steve
talked
Bannon
about having ICE agents
an audience
at the polls. He absolutely said that.
Okay. So meanwhile, back on Earth, nobody in the Republican administration has talked about ICE agents anywhere other than where they're supposed to be, which is getting rid of the 20 million people that the Biden-Harris administration let in. The problem is, again, Trump's trying to fix other people's problems. He's been doing that. The fact that he likes attention or gets news, like, again, we're 11 years into this.
But Guy, is Trump making things worse? I mean, because you can't argue. I mean, a lot of people don't feel like things have gotten better. Sharon on Facebook says, I'm definitely not better off these days. My top issues are the economy, Medicare and Medicaid, gun violence, breakdown of the family structure, and violence against women. These are Sharon's issues, but definitely she says she's not better off in the past couple of years. A lot of people feel that. And these are people you have to acknowledge, Guy. These are a lot of people who voted for Trump,
right,
who feel like he hasn't made things better. How do you respond to those people?
Because in some ways he has, in some ways things aren't. But he also inherited crap. I mean, he inherited a horrible economy after years of lockdowns and mandates. And again, it's like gas prices were high because President Biden and Vice President Harris said we were going to ban fossil fuels. California said they were going to eliminate gas-powered cars. So again, Trump came in, there was a problem. Here's all the good things that we haven't talked about. We haven't talked about the fact that he's lowered taxes, that we had no tax on tips, no tax on overtime. It has been, in many ways, but for the price of gas, which is an enormous issue, yes. But for that, it's been a very pro-working class agenda. Lower taxes, lower tax on tips, or no tax on tips, no tax on Social Security, no tax on overtime. It's been very focused. The piece of the puzzle that's missing has been the issue of gasoline from the war. So I reject the idea that he's only made things worse. I would say that it has been mixed. But he's fighting an uphill battle because the war is in the news every day. But again, when we talk about riots and chaos, Well, we tried giving them $600 million in money on pallets to buy peace, and that didn't work.
That was their money.
That wasn't
our money.
We sent them
That was their
that
money.
Was frozen.
Let's just be clear.
That was frozen because they didn't behave well.
And then they beheaded children in Israel.
So it clearly didn't work.
And by the way, I want to remind our listeners what the question is.
what is the question?
What issues are you following most as we head to the midterms? And what story do you think deserves more attention? 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. Someone actually has a question for you, Guy. Melinda from Philly's on the line. Melinda, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, thanks for having me. I was just wondering if Guy considers Medicare for All to be socialism, because I feel like a lot of countries which are not socialist countries do fund health care for everyone. Thank you.
So the question I would ask her is she arguing then for a single payer? In essence, Medicare for All, the government runs health care. We can debate until the cows come home whether it's socialism. I think it is. Some people don't. Okay. A single payer system is a train wreck. I do not want a bureaucrat in Washington deciding whether my kid gets a surgery or not. And again, respectfully, nobody from these so-called socialist nations, nobody from America gets on a plane and flies to Sweden or flies to Great Britain or sneaks over the border into Canada for medical coverage. There are thousands of people who every year live in government-run healthcare systems that come to the United States when they're in desperate need of real medical attention. Having one payer would be an abject disaster.
Yeah, why don't you respond to that?
And you want to respond at all?
I mean, it's, you know, you look at other countries and they have free healthcare and they're doing just fine. And so
it's not free.
We have problems in America that could probably be traced to the food, to our lifestyle, to many things. And certainly if we had free healthcare, I think that would be a big help to people who don't have a lot of money because of some of the policies that this administration has put in place.
Yeah. And so
Obamacare failed.
No, I think Obamacare was sabotaged, but I don't think it failed. I think that it was sabotaged by this administration. But certainly, you know, I think there are other countries with free health care where the people are doing just fine.
It's not free.
About to go to a break, guys. We've got a lot more issues to get through on the other side.
Exactly.
Let's get more folks into the conversation here. We still want to hear from you. What issues are you following the most as we head into the midterms? What story do you think deserves more attention? Give us a call, 888-477-9499, or email studio2@whyy.org. Thank you.
Welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Kevin McCorian for Avi Wolfman-Aaron. This hour, we're unpacking all the major political headlines with two local columnists on either side of the aisle. Joining us is Guy Shiraki, Senior Fellow with the Commonwealth Foundation. Welcome back to this side of the segment, Guy.
Good to still be here.
And Solomon Jones, Philadelphia Inquirer columnist and Word host.
Yeah, and as always, listeners, we'd love to hear from you. What issues are you following most as we head to the midterms? And what story do you think deserves more attention? The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And for our YouTube and Facebookers, hello. You can listen. You can chime in on the live chat. And I wanted to take a moment and talk about Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, because he's facing growing criticism over senior military departures and block promotions while the conflict in Iran continues. And Republican Senator Tom Tillis has called for his removal. He has said, quote, "I have never witnessed more inept management of the brave men and women who serve our country." Yeah. When you hear, Solomon, Republican senators stop publicly questioning the leadership of a Republican defense secretary, how politically dangerous is that? What do you think should be the response from Democrats when you hear that?
I think Democrats should say we agree.
Yeah,
it is inept, and it's troubling and it's dangerous. But I think that when I see Tom Tillis doing that, there's two things that come to mind. One is that he really means it. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that comes to mind is that he really means it, and it's political cover, because remember, the midterm elections are coming up. I think they have to create some daylight between themselves and a president who is executing an unpopular war. I think they have to, show some independence, mm-hmm. So that they have, a better chance to do better than they would in these upcoming elections. I think it's a political calculus.
Tom Tillis is resigning, so he's not running again.
Right.
So
but I think that is good for the party.
Right.
And I think that, ultimately you have other Republicans who are doing the same thing and saying the same thing. And again, I think it's helpful for them politically.
So, Guy, what do you think? Because I think a lot of people see Tom Tillis is resigning and he starts to speak out much more publicly against Trump and think, okay, this is what people really think behind the scenes. And they just don't say it until they don't have to run again.
No, I think this is what Republicans who are looking for a second career in MS now do on the way out the door. I like consistency or an explanation. In other words, if your position evolves, why? You vote for these people in office, you vote for empowering the president, and then suddenly you change your heart. And when I see a change of heart after a public feud with a president who wanted to defeat him in the primary, then I see somebody with an axe to grind. The same way, look, Senator Fetterman has defended Secretary Hegseth. So, I mean, mm-hmm. where it's this sort of push where the party's outliers are sometimes throw us curveballs. Look, more to the issue, which matters at the end of the day. Hegseth inherited a department in chaos. I mean, there were times where his predecessor was missing for 4 months and we didn't know where he was. We had a Department of Defense that had their number one mission. Their number one mission was to fight climate change. I thought it was to protect us from terrorists. So he had a series of generals and leadership that were doing things totally in opposite of their mission. And you have a new administration come in and you change leadership. I think it's more notable here because there's this axe to grind with Hegseth. Do I agree with everything you did? No, but do I know everything
but
he's doing?
The
issue should be about his capability,
politics. Guy, a retired Major General Randy Manner, he called Hegseth a clear and present danger to the national security of the United States and the world. And I mean, that's an extraordinary thing for a retired general to say about a sitting defense secretary. I mean, what would Hegseth have to do for Republicans to say that's enough? And I mean, this is from you hear a lot of families who have people who are deployed right now, and they've been deployed an exceptionally long time. People are very upset about this, and he's not giving people any solace.
Again, I respectfully, because I give a lot of weight to the men and women in military. I think there's a lot of sour grapes. There's a new administration with a new mission, and a lot of the folks who were there before were told what they were doing was wrong. and they chose to retire. And many of them were allowed to leave with dignity.
But some of them were fired.
Yes, and some of them should have been, because climate change is not the number one responsibility of the Pentagon.
I'm trying to understand.
It is not fighting down clouds. It is making sure the terrorists don't blow us up. That's the responsibility. So when you teach people certain things and you try to train men and women to fight the climate when they should be fighting terrorists or protecting our borders or watching our bases overseas, that's the problem. That it's a fundamental difference. So I would be much more concerned if it was Senator Dave McCormick or other folks who are more mainstream conservative Republicans in office rather than people with, you know, Dave McCormick wore the uniform. Dave McCormick is
a lot of institutional knowledge that was let go, that was not involved in any of that. This doesn't seem like it's
really all partisan, though, right, Guy? I mean, there's like Cherry's saying that there are, you know, advanced people in the military
who feel it's unfortunate. I think that when you talk about mission, the mission of the military should not be to blow up civilian boats in the Caribbean. The mission of the military should not be to start wars that we still don't know why those wars are being fought. You're putting people's children at risk.
Yeah.
And I served in the military. I was in the Marine Corps Reserves. And so I take it seriously. And I think that you have to have someone who has the requisite experience and can keep the people who have the experience in place. When you fire generals who have that battlefield experience and you don't, you're putting the American people at risk.
Yeah. And let me just bring in a couple callers back to back because we have a whole line of callers sort of waiting. By the way, the question of the day is, what issues are you following the most as we head to the midterms? And what story do you think deserves more attention? 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. We have Charlotte from Doylestown on the line. Charlotte, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, my biggest concern is a comment in terms of the perpetuation of the current administration lie about voter fraud. It's been proven that there's very little voter fraud in this country. It's also proven that it doesn't affect the outcome of local, state, or national elections. But this continued perpetuation of attempts at voter suppression. So most recently, that Trump is taking a request to the Supreme Court to have the United States Postal Service involved in mail-in ballot applications, voter registration rolls. They also were pushing hard and still pushing hard for the SAVE Act.
Mm-hmm.
That's my biggest concern. What are they going to do when it comes time to midterm elections? Are they going to be sending National Guard out to the polls?
Yeah.
I think the Democrats have a very strong opportunity to take back the Senate and the House, but if there's continued voter suppression attempts, that may not happen.
Thank you
so
much.
That's my biggest concern.
Thank you, Charlotte from Doylestown. Michelle from Philly's on the line as well. Michelle, you're on Studio 2 with your question or comment.
I have a comment about the universal insurance versus private pay. The first thing, I am a licensed mental health professional who has worked on both the healthcare settings and in leadership on the insurance side with a Medicaid plan in Pennsylvania. I'm also a self-employed therapist now. The first thing is that it's really, really sad that we're still having to have this debate. The biggest risk to Americans is medical debt that can financially ruin people. I myself am literally driving home from Penn Dental School because I have no dental insurance and I can't afford the little bit of insurance I did pay for insurance didn't cover it. So it's ridiculous. I go down there. It takes hours of time, but I go there because I can find affordable care.
Thank you. Thank you. That's Michelle.
I want to add one thing around
that's
Canadians
Michelle from Philly.
They have private dental and public care, and people
thank
get
you, Michelle.
Thank you. We'll have to let Michelle go.
We did talk about healthcare earlier in the hour. You did invoke the names of both John Fetterman and Dave McCormick recently. And the Democratic Senator John Fetterman is more popular among Republicans in Pennsylvania than Dave McCormick, the Republican. So an interesting little factoid there. And really a bombshell article out in the Wall Street Journal last week that really made John Fetterman seem disinterested in doing the day-to-day work of being a senator, and some, you know, very dismissive actions he took around meetings he was supposed to have and mm-hmm. engagements he was supposed to have with constituents, etc. Solomon, do you want to comment on that article and the current situation with John Fetterman?
You know, I'm disappointed that John mm-hmm. Fetterman has taken the tack that he has. I think that he has the voters, his conscience. I voted for John Fetterman. I've interviewed John Fetterman numerous times. And, you know, he is seemingly a different person than the person I spoke to. And so that is troubling for me. But I think that the people will have their say when the elections come up. The fact that you have staffers saying you're ignoring your constituents, though, I think is more troubling than anything else that he has done, because we put you there. And so you are there to represent the needs and the people who put you there. And he's not doing that. And it's very unfortunate. And he'll have to answer for that when his term is up.
And Guy, did you have a reaction to that Wall Street Journal story? Much Ado About Nothing or
no, what? It's a political hit piece. And it is the Democratic Party going after one of their own because he stepped out of line. And I would remind listeners that Senator Fetterman votes with Chuck Schumer 91% of the time, that he has 100% rating from Planned Parenthood, 100% rating from the AFL-CIO. He thinks that men should be permitted to play in women's sports. He holds many progressive views. It's that he steps out of line because he thinks Israel has a right to defend itself and our border should be secure, and he can shake Dave McCormick's hands. And for those sins, there has been a 2-year orchestrated campaign to undermine him. Again, consistency by the very people who told me, who in some cases yelled at me in 2022 after his stroke, that he was perfectly fine to hold office, and any suggestion that he was not physically or mentally up to the job was heresy, cruel, or bigoted. Now the very people who told me not to ask questions now question his mental capacity and his physical endurance to do the job. What's changed?
But
he thinks
but
Israel
guy,
should
I mean,
defend itself
guy,
and the border should be secure.
Ideology aside, I mean, if you got word that a Republican senator was not showing up to meetings, and I mean, one of our callers, Michelle, I think from Philly, talked about healthcare as being a thing. He wouldn't meet with people from CHOP who had questions about, you know, healthcare and Medicaid and Medicare. If this was a Republican senator and this was a true and accurate report, what would, I mean, would you be a little concerned about his ability to sure. do a job and show up and actually, you know, do the job that the voters hired him to do?
So first of all, he apologized for the meeting with CHOP. So he's saying that was wrong, and he should have. If he had a meeting and canceled the meeting, he should apologize. Again, they seem to want it all. He doesn't meet with constituents because he's at a hearing. He doesn't go to a hearing because he's meeting with constituents. He goes on the radio. He should have been on TV. Look, I was chief of staff to a member of Congress. You cannot do the job in 24 hours in a day. And if I wanted to undermine the gentleman I represented, I could have always said, well, he had 17 letters. He only read 6 of them. He sat in the meeting for 10 minutes and then he got up and walked out. You don't do that. This is orchestrated. I'm sorry, Chair. You can't put aside the ideology because he was this guy in 2023 and nobody reported it to the Wall Street Journal. The only thing changed is how he's behaving.
I think you're running out the clock. The one thing I do want to say before you do that is that Donald Trump ran people in primary elections against every Republican that got in his way. Many of those races, his candidates won. And so to claim that Democrats are somehow the only ones who are saying that, you know, we take umbrage with what John right. Fetterman is doing, I think is disingenuous at best.
About 2.5 minutes left. Could you guys each hit a story that you're following that you think isn't getting enough attention? Let's start with you, Solomon.
I think the charter school that just paid $4 million for leaving black students out of its lottery. I think that that is a story that I think we should look across the board at what other charter schools that have lotteries are doing. I remember applying for a charter school for my son when he was about 12 and just wondering, is this lottery real? You know, we have really no way of knowing that in many cases. And so I think it's something that needs to be looked into.
What's the name of the school?
Franklin Town. Franklin Town, right?
Charter, okay. Yeah.
And Guy, what's the thing on your mind?
So one, as a charter school supporter, as a school choice supporter, Those guys rigged the system, and they deserve to have the book thrown at them, right? Mm-hmm. There are 30,000 children on waiting lists in Philadelphia for charter schools. That's how desperately they want to get in. If anybody's rigging the system for political favor or on the base of race, throw the book at them. The story that's not being talked about is that Josh Shapiro is openly running for president, and all this idea that he's thinking about it or flirting about it, it is the prism through which every decision, from measles to data centers to abortion to taxes to school choice. We are one of 12 states that has not opted into the federal tax credit to allow people to donate for scholarships for low income. Every single decision. Yeah. And we're missing it because we're pretending he's not running for president. It's guiding his governorship. And the fact that it would do it in the next 4 years is a greatly underreported story because it impacts our lives.
Yeah. And as we close, I cannot let this hour end without your quick thoughts on the fact that John Daugherty, had his sentence commuted by President Donald Trump. You each have like 15 seconds. The 15 seconds, guy.
As a stunning turn of events, Donald Trump led with his heart.
Okay.
I don't think it's a stunning turn of events. I think it's a brilliant political move because you have white working class males who will now support Donald Trump based on his support of John Daugherty.
I was being facetious. He always leads with his heart and not his head.
And with that, I want to say thank you so much to Guy Shiraki, Senior Fellow with the Commonwealth Foundation. And of course, thank you to Solomon Jones, Philadelphia Inquirer columnist and WURD host. Thank you both for fiery conversation
thank
today.
You.
But keeping
thank
it
you.
Civil.
Yes. Fiery all conversation right. today.
And let's thank our producers, Debbie Builder, Hazel Mae Bryan, and Ben Abrams. Mike Schiffler is our visual engineer. Today's show is engineered by Al Beam of Light Banks and Tina Calliquet. And from Studio 2 here at WHYY, I'm Kevin McCord.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Also, thank you to our callers. We tried to get your thoughts and ideas into the show, so we appreciate you sharing with us as always. And thank you, of course, for listening, and we'll see you on the radio tomorrow.